we were in the right place, right time for the three of us. All of us were feeling, you know, unfulfilled in our current jobs and careers and like wanted to start something, perhaps for different reasons, but all had the same drive, passion, excitement to start something on our own terms, build something we could be proud of. Like we knew we needed to start a business together. We just didn't know what the idea was. So when people think, you know, people often assume because of my background in nutrition or that I was making kombucha for a decade before we started Health Aid, that like that was the passion. But actually the truth is the reason we started a business is because we were passionate about starting a business and doing something on our own. Kombucha ended up being the vehicle.
That's how success happens. From Entrepreneur Magazine, my name is Robert Tuckman. I self-funded, built up, and eventually sold two businesses to major players in the sports and entertainment industry. And I am fascinated by other entrepreneurial minds and what drives high-achieving people. So on this podcast, we're going to learn what they've learned and what it takes to really succeed. I love the story of Dinah Trout and how she created probably one of the most successful beverage companies in America today called Health Aid Kombucha. And the most amazing part to me is she did it in a three-way partnership with her husband, Justin, and to top it off, with her best friend, Vanessa Du. Sounds like a dream or a nightmare, considering who you might ask. But boy, have they made it work. Health Aid Kombucha has grown from a small production beverage made in her apartment and sold at local farmers markets into the fastest growing brand in the category 3 years in a row. I got right to it with Dinah since I was so amazed she created this incredible business with people so close to her and they were still thriving. I mean, I tried starting a business once with my wife and I tell you, it lasted about a day before we were either going to get divorced or we were going to close the business. So I'm still married. We're not divorced. It didn't work on the business side. But I admire how Dana has done it and seemingly enjoying it every step of the way with her closest relationships. Of course, naturally, I had to start there.
I wouldn't say I recommend it, at least not the husband part, but at the same time, it kind of makes a lot of sense, right? You do want to start a business with someone you trust. You want to start a business with somebody that you can communicate with, like really say the truth to, because there are going to be tough conversations, high emotions, high stakes. So you need to be able to like say the things to the person. And typically those are your closest friends and the ones you love. So I think it ends up being a very natural option for people. And I guess in that way, it does make a lot of sense. So, you know, for us, it's worked. It's not something I make a joke and I say it's not something I recommend, but actually it's probably made us much stronger, all of our relationships, of course, as tough things do when you make it through. And I think there are some keys to that. I can imagine that it doesn't always go well, but mostly if you communicate very honestly, respectfully, and sort of just fully, that's pretty much the key. And then also separating time to be just that other relationship. So for both the friendship and the marriage, we learned the hard way 3-4 years in that because the business is so all consuming and demanding that if you don't, it won't naturally come up that you can just have a date night. It doesn't happen. So you really have to carve out and be disciplined, carve out the time to be just husband, wife, to be just best friends and not talk about the business at all. Of course, that's tough to do. And we constantly have to like force ourselves into that discipline. It certainly isn't just easy now, but that's really the key. It's not easy, but it's simple.
Yeah. You know, it makes so much sense when you put it like that, because I've always joked like I could never work with my wife. That is for sure. We actually tried for a couple of days and that did not work. But when you say and you talk about communication and trust, and those are the most important things I look at in a business partner. And it really makes sense when you say that if you can make it work and how you've done it with actually separating, kind of compartmentalizing your different lives, it seems to have worked. But how did it come about? Because what I love about your story and what I've heard, it's really a gritty entrepreneur story, like a real startup. So how did the original idea come about and then you decided to make it happen?
Yeah. So first, we were in the right place, right time for the three of us. All of us were feeling unfulfilled in our current jobs and careers and like wanted to start something, perhaps for different reasons, but all had the same drive, passion, excitement to start something on our own terms, build something we could be proud of. Like we knew we needed to start a business together. We just didn't know what the idea was. So when people think, people often assume because of my background in nutrition or that I was making kombucha for a decade before we started HealthAid, that like that was the passion. But actually the truth is the reason we started a business is because we were passionate about starting a business and doing something on our own. Kombucha ended up being the vehicle.
Yeah. And that's so interesting because if I was thinking about it and knowing your background, right, you've studied, you know, health and basically health and wellness throughout your resume. That was my thought. But it seems like to me, you were tired of corporate America.
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of for me, my driver. So yes, always been passionate about food, real food, how it makes you feel. So like, I think no matter what, I would have ended up doing something like that and being in health overall. But no, the driver for me was in corporate America, I had this awesome opportunity to be a change agent for a really huge company. And in this job for a year, I was able to basically meet with hundreds of different teams, interview them. And my goal was to improve employee engagement. Anyway, the long story short is I learned two things in that experience. And that really was the reason I started HealthAid. First, I learned that I was very good at getting people to kind of rally and come back and connect them and find a purpose and sort of like get excited about working again. And then secondly, not only was I good at it, but I really liked it. And I learned so much in that year time where I interviewed all these teams. I learned about good teams, bad teams, good managers, bad managers, what it takes to be productive. And it was like a business class course. And so I loved that job. And then it was just an internship though. So after a year, I got placed back into my sales job and I was like, huh? I need to be on my own doing this stuff. So that was when I went to, so it wasn't that I was like over corporate America as much as it was, I knew I had a calling to be a leader of people and I wanted to give that a shot. I had nothing to lose. At the same time, Vanessa had her own reason to feel unfulfilled, Justin too. And we were like, let's start an entrepreneur club. So in that entrepreneur club, we came up with all kinds of ideas.
So you guys actually started a club to like talk about ideas? Or wasn't just like, this was actually something you guys were planning or had planned basically?
No. We started the entrepreneur club. In fact, we came up with 100 ideas before landing on kombucha. And the only requirement in terms of ideas is that you had to come with a problem. So any problem you had that week, you would come to the table and talk about it. Whether it was, I can't find a parking spot, and that was really annoying, to, at the time, I remember one of my ideas. At the time, we were planning a wedding because Justin and I were engaged, and I was really frustrated at the state of registries at that time. So I had ideas about that. So all kinds of ideas, like not at all related to food and beverage necessarily. In fact, I think kombucha was the only one, but we didn't even land on kombucha in that meeting. In that meeting, what happened was Justin came to the table and really recognized that there was an opportunity in hair loss or protecting people from hair loss.
And I wish you guys had gone with that one because I'd be doing a lot better now. But I guess that was your first idea?
Well, that was the problem.
Right.
That was the problem. So we started researching what would regrow hair. And I was looking for something natural and food related because of my background. And I kept finding on the internet that the culture used to make kombucha, also sometimes known as the SCOBY, but it's basically like a pancake. It's basically probiotics, if you were to call it its most simplest form. They were using it as a mask on the head. And they would say, I've been using this every day. And 3 years later, I have a full head of hair. And I'm like,
yeah.
And because that was a huge market opportunity and because we had no money and kombucha was cheap to make, I knew how to make SCOBYs. Like it was all stuff we had that we could do. We said, let's give it a shot. So we started making a lot of kombucha, but not for the liquid at all, just to make and duplicate these cultures. Mm-hmm. And we're going to use Justin as our guinea pig because his hair was starting to thin.
Yes, he had a personal mission himself, I see.
Yeah.
Like I do.
Yeah. Well, good news is he still has a full head of hair. So maybe you just have to drink a lot of kombucha.
Exactly. Wouldn't that be awesome?
So yeah, I mean, basically what happened was we started to go down this road of making SCOBYs and intending to save the world from baldness. And we ended up getting an opportunity to sell in a really productive and hard to get into farmer's market in LA. And the thing about the three of us, we are a lot of things, and this is both a blessing and a curse, my team will tell you, but we say yes well before we're ready to say yes. Always. We're like kind of the, an opportunity comes and we generally just say, well, yeah, we're going to take it. I mean, when could this opportunity show up again? You know,
I love that.
So this opportunity to sell at Brentwood Farmers Market came up and we had to have our product complete in just a few weeks. And wow, being sort of bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, first-time entrepreneurs, we thought that 3 weeks, that's, you know, 21 days. You've got time. But learned quickly that it was much harder to create a product. And we had all this kombucha because it was, even though it was a byproduct, I didn't throw it out because I made really good kombucha. So I had it all bottled in my apartment. It was actually taking over my apartment. We had 60 or so cases.
I love it.
So after we couldn't make the product, we thought, well, we already signed up for this farmer's market. What are we going to sell? You know? And here was this product staring us in the face. So we're like, okay, we're going to sell the best freaking kombucha you can buy. And we thought it would just be a summer project and that the money we made from the farmer's market would go toward the real business, which was going to be the hair loss business. But as you can see, 8 years later.
You're in the kombucha business now. I'll tell you that, to the tune of mega retailers and hundreds of millions of dollars in kombucha sales. So yeah, it's a great thing. I'm so glad. And it's so interesting because your story, you know, as I said, thinking of you and your background in health and wellness, like my first thought is that's what she wanted. That was what she would focus on. But how did it go? So that take me back to that day at the farmer's market. Did you get feedback that day? Were people buying it? What happened?
Yeah. So we sold out in less than a couple hours, which really blew us away. I remember the first exchange when somebody didn't just buy one, they bought two bottles. And I was like, you sure? Okay. you know, so really had no real understanding or expectation of what it could lead to. But yes, for us, it was a very lucky beginning where like the winds were telling us we were sitting on a huge opportunity. By market three, people were lining up to get our kombucha before the market opened. It was like a real undeniable energy in that summer at our farmers markets. And we expanded from one to three to seven within just a matter of months. But it was like, there was like a high. That's all, the only way I could describe it. But at the same time, we sort of forced that. We didn't just like sit there and people came to us. I mean, it was like, what did you sell last week? We're going to double that this week. And the way we would do that is like, nobody could walk through that market without trying our kombucha. Let's just say that. So there's no question that it's not like we just woke up and suddenly had this energy. We forced it, but then also I think we just happened to land, I think, on sort of a flywheel.
And what was like that? That's such an incredible, fast-paced, quick, you know, story. It just happened all of a sudden. What do you think it was? Because, you know, was it a certain timing? Was there, what was going on that really you think started your company off so successfully?
I certainly think a timing component, and that was really out of my control, was already well underway. So first of all, we started in LA. LA tends to be the birthplace of health and wellness. And so kombucha was not a new thing to at least 50% of our consumers. So it's not like I was trying to even educate half of them on what it was. So yeah, a lot of my, like I would say half of our consumers in that market were already buying kombucha. And they just liked ours because it was better tasting, higher quality, more artisanally made. And then the other 50% were new to kombucha, but they knew already about probiotics. And they knew their doctor said they should start eating more probiotics and fermented foods. So it was like, it was an easy sort of step. And I think one of our competitors started selling kombucha, I think 11 or 12 years before we even got to market. And I'm sure his story would be very different because he had to really educate from the start, probiotics, organic acids, and kombucha overall. For us, it was like the healthiest consumers already kind of knew. And so we were giving them a really tasty, delicious solution, and it was an easy step. But it still wasn't totally easy. Like there's the right time to enter a market. And it's funny, kombucha continues to grow, we don't know when that window is going to close. From a retailer perspective, some of them are carrying 20, 30 brands.
Wow.
You know, so you start to wonder, like, when is enough enough? Or what's, and usually in beverage, what happens is there's like a saturation of products and brands within a category, and then there's like a shakeout. We haven't really hit that point yet for kombucha, and who knows if it will come, because not every category behaves the same. So there is that, we kind of hit it right at the beginning of the wave, but yet we were one of the first ones. So I would say most retailers carry us, and we were one of the first sort of three or four brands they carried.
Yeah. And how did you handle that? Because most businesses don't just take off, and especially in your business where you're packaging, you're bottling. Was that a big challenge?
I mean,
I don't want to set up the question, but I could, if it wasn't,
for the Lord,
you are really done. Unbelievable.
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, the growth part in many ways, the right time, right place part. Yes, that's, you know, often the thing that people focus on. And of course, there's positivity to that. But what you have to also recognize is that with that level of growth comes also that level of, I always say that growth equals that number of problems or challenges. So if you're growing 4X, what's normal? You've got 4X on the back end that you're dealing with. And it can be enough to make, hopefully the wheels, you know, only shake, but they can fall off. And that's obviously, you know, where you don't want to be. You don't want to be in a boom splat situation. And so, yes, the back end, the operations, the manufacturing was by far and still is by far the biggest challenge of running this business. Growth has not continued to be just like hockey stick. Obviously, as the business has gotten bigger, there have been sort of like plateaus where we've had to push through. So growth for certain is not just like inevitable. But even still, the biggest challenge for sure is manufacturing. And there's three components to that, I would say. First, there's the capital it takes to just manufacture and scale and keep up with that amount of growth. Especially early on, you're spending a lot of money to pay for your product up front. And stores like Whole Foods are taking 3 months to pay you back after they receive the product. So there's a good 6 months of time where you need to have the cash to handle like that exchange. And because you're growing 4X, you're talking about 4X, which you're, I mean, it's a lot of cash you need on hand. You know, I remember when we actually got a finance person on board and we weren't just using Excel, we recognized that we needed early on a couple million bucks in the bank just to make that work. And to us who were living on $7 a day, that was absurd to think that we needed $2 million cash just to make the business run. And so, you know, the capital is a component, and that's just to make the ingredients happen. You find out what a filling line costs, it's enough to make your heart skip a beat, you know? So, you know, you need capital. You really do. And either that comes from something you've saved up or debt. Hopefully you can get debt. We didn't have access to that because we had no assets. So we got investment early on. And that's not something I'm ashamed of, you know, for sure. Yeah, we diluted ourselves early, but what else, like what other choice did we have?
It seems like that was your only option at the time, especially when you couldn't fund it yourself. Like you said, this was your first business. I imagine it was actually pretty hard even to get, was it hard to bring in capital for the business at that point?
So we lived for a year. When I say bare bones, I don't even know how to describe it to you because it was so bare bones, eviction notices on the door type of bones. But we lived like that for a year. And then when Amex and everybody cut us off and we had no access to cash was when we went out to the world and said, we got something here, but we need some capital. And luckily, and this is where the sort of fortunate part comes in, right place, right time part, kombucha was already starting to grow. We had created a little bit of a buzz about us in LA. We were in 7 farmers markets. Cameron Diaz was drinking our kombucha. That was on Us Weekly. Like we just had a little bit of a buzz. So it didn't hurt us when we went to LA-based investment bankers who already knew this category was growing. It had a lot of potential. It wasn't really actually that small even. It was already about when we joined, it was already about a $500 million category. So you know, not exactly niche, probably between niche and early. And because we had this buzz, I don't know, it just wasn't that difficult. We had quite a few interested players. We were already making about $500,000 in revenue. So again, we weren't pre-revenue. And I think that's the luck part. You know, I remember hooking up with First Beverage Group, and those were the folks that first invested in us. And they were already well aware of the opportunity with kombucha. So that helped.
Yeah. What was that like at that point? Because, you know, we talked to a lot of entrepreneurs and similar stories some of the times with living on off of credit cards and debt. Was there ever a time in that period you guys were thinking of like just turning the lights out?
Yeah.
Like every day?
I mean, you know, we didn't want to, yeah. But for sure there were moments weekly, if not daily, where we're like, okay, we're either onto something or we're completely nuts and have just ruined ourselves financially for the rest of life. Because we signed, you know, personally signed everything, had no assets. So I guess, I don't know what that would have done. But yeah, no, for sure. Especially that moment right before, listen, that quote, it's darkest before the dawn. That's a yeah. real thing in business when I look back. But there was a very dark moment before we received investment from First Beverage. We were out of solutions. There was no debt. We had maxed out all of our credit cards. The credit cards now were calling us to say, you're done. And no cash, just like it was nothing. And here we were making kombucha. You know, Whole Foods wanted to come and check out our facility and sign us up. I mean, what an opportunity, right? But we didn't have the money and it was just very scary. And we needed it so fast that it almost felt impossible because typically these deals take, you know, months.
Sure.
At least. And we were like shut down today. So yeah, for sure. That was, I would say, a really low moment. And there have been a few of those moments. I mean, when you hook up with institutional money, what's nice about that is there's some security provided you continue to grow and develop a strong business. You don't have to like go out and fundraise like you would.
Right.
You know, pros and cons to institutional money for sure, but that's one of the pros. And so we didn't have to do a ton of like outreach in my life at HealthAid.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's what you said, like the darkest before the dawn and getting through those periods. And I've heard that so many times. It's almost like just being able to hang on long enough. And it sounds like once you were able to get funds, you really were in a good spot where you then were able to grow? Or did you face any other major, major challenges in the first couple of years?
Of course. So yes, when that first money came, I would call that a marquee moment for us. There are a few. The first was probably when we quit our jobs and really worked at HealthAid full-time. That was a marquee moment. The second marquee moment, I would say, is when we received our first dollars and enough to be able to essentially hire people and to buy a filling machine. So it was like, once we got arms and legs, and more than arms and legs, like smart brains, and then yeah. also fast filling equipment that could actually like move us from sort of home scale to at least small scale, but some level of scale. Those were the two important things we got out of the capital. But for sure, the challenges existed all around us. I mean, all it is in the beginning is problems. It's just yeah. 1,000 problems a day that you got to solve until you go to sleep and you wake up and you solve 1,000 more.
Yeah.
You know, I used to imagine myself like falling off a horse like 100 times a day. And just no matter how bruised, battered, and hurt you are, you have to get back on and do it better. And if you have that mentality of like, you cannot quit and you cannot fail because eventually you're going to get a win. I really believe that's sort of the secret to success in those beginning years is just you're the one that doesn't quit.
I love that. I really love that from all the entrepreneurs I've talked to and being an entrepreneur myself, it really comes down to, I believe, this persistence and ability to pick yourself up off the mat, because it is so disheartening in so many ways starting a business where you have so many rejections and so many challenges. And it just, I really related to that as going to sleep with those, waking up and then you got to do it again. And it's just so hard to do. But it seems like for you, was that always part of you, that drive? You know, yeah. Was that something you've always had inside of you?
Yeah. For sure. And it's why I think entrepreneurism isn't for everyone. I would agree with you entirely. I think that grit, that drive is the key piece, or at least it was for our story in those first 3 years. And, you know, grit gets you kind of really far, at least it's for us. And then new things, you know, you're demanded, there's new things that the business demands past grit. You know, you can't just be always like crazy, gritty, lean, right? You've got to start to build systems and yeah. leadership. you know, hierarchies and stuff. And that's been an interesting phase later, but in the beginning, for sure, grit got us pretty far. Yes. And I would say this is something that's always been within me, although I didn't exactly know it, right? It became more of a hindsight 2020 thing when I look back at my, you know, feeling of always sort of, yeah, I mean, drive. I would call myself a rebellious optimist.
I love that.
A hardworking rebellious optimist. And now it's easy to put into three words because I've done so much work to sort of like develop and do better and get better and understand myself. But as a kid, I think that's always been true.
Yeah, it's amazing how it's ingrained, because if you don't have that ability to do that, I could just imagine how many times you would have walked away and not seen the success that you've had, because it is so hard so many times. And so many of our listeners who are either entrepreneurs starting out or want to be entrepreneurs, I think for them, just to know that you're gonna face so many challenges, even with your story where it was like you were a hit right off the bat when you went to that first farmer's market, which is so incredible.
More from our guest, but first, a word from our sponsors. Finding simple and effective ways to keep employees engaged and customers happy is always top of mind for business owners and managers. And that is especially true during these challenging times when face-to-face interaction is definitely limited. So, you trust Uber as a way to request rides and order meals from restaurants you love, but did you know about Uber's platform designed specifically for businesses? Believe it or not, over 160,000 companies are using Uber for Business to improve customer and employee satisfaction. Any company can sign up for free and immediately start delivering extra value to the people who matter most to their business. Vouchers are simple to send and to redeem, and your business has total control over who gets them, when they expire, and what portion of the ride or meal you want to cover. Vouchers are shared via email or text and can be redeemed with a single tap. Best of all, you only pay for rides they take or meals they order. So right now, Uber for Business is offering companies a $50 voucher credit when you spend your first $200 with vouchers. Go to uber.com/successpod to learn more. That's uber.com/successpod for a $50 voucher credit. uber.com/successpod. Terms and conditions apply.
And our next sponsor.
Ping Identity is the leader in enterprise identity security. Ping champions the unique identity of enterprises so the world's largest organizations can deliver secure digital experiences to their employees and customers around the world. The Chief Identity Champion, or CIC, is the embodiment of Ping's identity's personality and values. The CIC is a coach, a cheerleader, and a champion of identity security, eager to elevate Ping Identity customers and help them flourish in a digital economy. Ping champions identity so that the world's largest organizations can deliver more secure, extraordinary digital experiences to their employees and customers around the world. So, we all know everyone has had a bad experience as an employee signing on to multiple applications and spending way too much time with IT resetting passwords. Everyone's had a bad customer experience where a website or application doesn't remember your information and you have to re-enter it multiple times or sign on several times. Oh my God, this literally happens to me on a daily basis. I know my IT department at my company definitely hates me, but these are the types of experiences that Ping Identity makes awesome. So let identity security set you free. In today's digital business world, you can't have security slow you down. With Ping Identity, your business is secure and agile. Make lovable digital experiences. With Ping Identity, you can make lovable digital experiences that keep your customers secure and coming back for more. Work securely, productively, anywhere. Want your employees to be productivity rock stars? With Ping Identity, you can help them securely access everything they need to get the job done without passwords, even on the road. Ping Identity,
identity security for the global enterprise. I consider Ping the champions of enterprise identity security. So check out pingidentity.com. That's pingidentity.com.
And we're back.
One thing I wanted to go, you know, when you said you were working in corporate America, what you did and what you enjoyed, I have to believe a big part of, because I've read a lot about the business and the culture, has that been an area you've really focused on in terms of atmosphere, culture? It seems like you've built this incredible place to work.
It's awesome. It's awesome. It's even blown my expectations. And now I feel just like I'm privileged literally to be here and just be the CEO and continue to drive it. But yes, it's something we always prioritized. And that is because of the work I had as change agent. I recognized the importance of culture, values, people needing a purpose to work for, somebody good. They need to feel good about working where they're working. They need autonomy to grow. They need space to make mistakes. And they need to be put in the right roles for who they were. So even early on, we had things like culture interviews set up, you know, where we didn't just interview somebody, a candidate, based on their skills and experience, but actually place equal importance on their ability to fit into our culture. That was something we did probably well before most companies do,
yeah.
You know, before we had anybody in HR or anything like that. And it was something that the three of us just knew. I knew we had to do that. So we just did it. You know, we created a set of questions that we thought aligned to what, you know, who would do well here. And, you know, questions sort of like, tell me about your number one rock bottom day at work.
I love that.
So it's a great question because people will tell you, I mean, it's not a great thing to think about, right? Everybody's had a bad day.
Yeah.
But what you hear are, how did people respond? You know, are they still holding resentment about it? Do they blame others? Are they taking accountability for it? Are they comfortable saying to you, they didn't do it right then, but they've learned since? All these things come out from a question like that that can help you understand
who cares
what the incident is, right? So anyway, examples like that, we've had values, we've had what our values are, not just written down from the beginning, but a thing that we keep alive from the beginning. We're very good about doing all hands meetings, communicating what each department is doing. Yeah, I mean, it's now built upon itself. Right now we have these like really highly coveted awards in-house that get handed out quarterly that people fight for. And that's just like created its own energy. It's a really awesome place to work. And I think for sure, that's one of the reasons we've had success. And that when we talked about the wheel shaking earlier, I think one of the reasons they haven't fallen off is that, because really they should have, there's been so, with that growth comes so many issues and challenges that like it's inevitable, you know, you're flying the plane and fixing it and building it at the same time. Eventually you're going to hit something, but we really haven't, because I think people are all aligned, they're rowing in the same direction. And when we have to pivot, like we're kind of, we gather, we connect on it, we communicate about it, and then we go. So we're all doing the same thing. Like there's not a lot of confusion here.
Yeah. I love how you've built that organization. And especially from day one, it's to me so genius of thinking about a culture interview. You know, that's the most important thing, how people work with one another and how they're going to integrate into your organization. Was there a moment where you were like, you looked to your husband and your best friend, you were like, wow, like, look what we've built. Have you had, what was that first time maybe you guys said that?
It might sound really silly to hear this, but I probably didn't have that moment until 7 years in.
Wow.
Now, it's not to say that I wasn't proud when we entered Whole Foods or that I wasn't totally taking creepy pictures of people drinking kombucha in the water.
Yeah, good.
Hey, I'm just going to take a there were those moments, but like, the feeling of being like, wait, do we have a legitimate business that isn't just going to go, you know, blown into the wind? It didn't feel like that until around last year. And I don't know exactly what the moment was, but it was, I think that we were surpassing 100 million in retail sales. And it just felt like no matter what, it wasn't going to go away. Like no matter what came at us, we were going to figure it out. Profitability for our business was in sight. We weren't yet profitable, but we were really close. So there was like this sort of line of sight to being a healthy business, not just super high growing one. And then around that time, we received an investment from Coca-Cola. And that was really awesome. You know,
they're a pretty big company in the beverage space.
Yeah. So it felt like a testament or like a badge of honor to be like recognized and supported by Coke. And of course, Coca-Cola is a liquid. There's some stigma to that, but the company itself is a fantastic company of people. And they really do support entrepreneurism and venture companies out there. And I don't know, last year, that was the first moment where we're like, okay, I think this isn't going to go away.
Yeah. Now, was that just you and your personal feel, or was it also your partners, you know, or is it just that that's kind of who you are, that you didn't feel that way?
I think it was all three of us. You know, There was I can't remember her name because I'm horrible at names, but whoever won the tennis finals this year, she was asked in an interview right after, like, are you going to go and celebrate? And she won it all. And it was like a complete upset. And she was like, she thought about it and she goes, no, I have to go back and practice. And while I don't necessarily agree with not celebrating, I do think you have to celebrate. But I think the point is the journey to success in business, it is not one that has a start and a stop. There might be marquee moments and moments where you can like take a break and be like, wow, look how far I've come. And for sure, that's a good thing to do. But it's like, I'm not there yet.
Yeah. How do you spend most of your days now? Like, what's your day to day for running the business?
It's crazy. And I don't like wear that as a badge of honor. Being a CEO of this business, you know, so we've got about 150 people to give you a sense, and we're close to 200 million, I'd say, in retail sales. And we're growing about 15%. So just giving you a sense. I mean, right now we're building a brewery. We're moving from one process to another. Of course, COVID. We've got just the normal state of business of where we're trying to meet plan where we expected. And so my day comprises of essentially probably 50% like set meetings where I'm meeting with department leads and other directors. We're checking in on the strategy of the business and, you know, we're talking through things. And then it's probably about 20% fires, like, oh shit, the public health department is here. And then probably like 10%, I do press related stuff. Like I'll do like one press related thing a day, maybe
right.
Last maybe a few times a week. And then a cross-departmental meeting, usually a day, something we're trying to deliver, like create a really big cross-departmental initiative. And like, it's taking all kinds of people and I'll be in that too. So I guess what I don't have, I would say, are very many breaks. My day is usually back to back completely. And if a half hour pops up within 20 minutes, it's taken. And that's challenging, you know, so I have to really take care of myself because the energy, even though I'm really careful to only work from 8:30 to 5:30 because I have two little boys at home and I'm trying to be a good mom. That's also really important to me. So I'm really good about those guardrails. What ends up happening because I've got a shortened amount of time is that, you know, 9 hour day is really intense.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Take care of myself so that I can do it. I also have a lot of energy, so I think it works. But yeah, I mean, it's not for the faint of heart.
Yeah. How has COVID impacted your business?
Yeah. So we were like, I would say not a target hit, but wounded. Lucky because most of our business is in grocery and grocery remained open. So in grocery, we experienced growth. But in the other channels, like convenience and on-premise, which is basically like restaurants and bars, obviously, you know, experienced massive declines. And so that impacted our business on the whole, probably about 10%. So we grew 10% less than we expected because of COVID, but all things considered, not too poorly. We still grew overall. And, you know, I'm really grateful for that. So it appeared that consumers who were already drinking kombucha continued to drink kombucha, maybe even a little bit more. So that was obviously a very big positive. On the back end, though, because we saw the softened revenues headed our way, we really took the opportunity to focus on our capabilities in-house to increase efficiencies and just build any kind of cushion we could, because who knows what the F is going to come, you know?
Right.
And I'm so glad that we did that because we're ending the year with a cushion. And it's not a lot, but it's the first cushion we've ever had. Right. And with this, we can you know, we just, it's so, I've learned for the first time how important it is to be profitable, like how a healthy business is the best business. So to focus only on growth is really, you're not looking at it from the full lens, because now that I have this cushion, we have so many more options. When I think about 2021, we can choose to continue to run it super lean, stay where we are. You know, it's almost like you can prepare for all different phases or levels of growth. All I'm saying is I'm never going back. And then, you know, COVID has impacted us too. Just, we run a manufacturing plant, so we've remained open, and that's obviously been a challenge. We figured it out, but in the beginning, it was very scary.
Sure.
And the people who can work from home are, and I'm sure that's got its pros and cons, you know, and that's had an impact on our culture. So we've had to really focus on that. It's impacted a lot. It's been the toughest year yet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think it's not only in your business's lifetime, but I think for many I mean, it's just so crazy right now, just in terms of it personally, starting my own business at this time, and it's all virtual. It's just such a different, unique time that I hope a lot of positive, like you said, you did some things that have helped your business that might impact it later on. So it sounds like the silver linings are you have been able to come up with some things that in the future, when hopefully this is all behind us, will be able to help the business as well.
Yeah, for sure. I'm hoping we don't. I know right now 2020 is sort of the year you don't want to go back to.
No.
And I would probably still agree with that. But I do think that after some of the wounds have healed, we might look back at 2020 and think, you know, my, how we've grown. And I don't mean just from a revenue standpoint, probably actually not from a revenue standpoint, but more so it's in these tough years that we learn the most about ourselves. We learn how to prioritize. And I have a lot of lessons, rich lessons I plan to carry forward with me from this year.
I love that. Any of those you can share just in terms of personal, like not to be personal, but personal stuff that you really have learned this year that you are going to carry forward?
Yes. So I have three. I've done a lot of reflecting on this in the last few days. So I actually, this is fresh top of mind.
Perfect.
So yeah, three really main ones. And the first is, you know, and I know this word has become cliche, self-care, but what I've learned is that taking care of myself is critical. And well, of course, I've always taken care of myself. I think I've always been the sort of last to receive the love. I'm not a person that's like a martyr at all, but when the burdens came on from COVID, and it wasn't just in business, right? I have two kids now, I'm home. I don't have childcare. How the hell do I do all of this? You know, very normal sort of parent experience this year, extra work. Extra work meant less time to put in time for yourself. And while I was able to do that for a short time, the whole cookie crumbled.
Yeah.
And I recognized that my energy is actually a really precious resource, and that if it's not there, there's nothing. It all goes away. So it was a real lesson of reprioritizing sort of self-care on the lists of hierarchy. Definitely no longer the last spot.
Yeah, I love that.
The second lesson I would say is, wow, look all I can do. You know, I mean, it was one of sort of power and recognition that I can do a lot more than I ever would have thought I can do if I were to see it on paper. And then also even my ability to control my response to fear too, like the power over fear, you know, fear can take over, but only if you let it. I would say is the lesson. And then, you know, even in my power too, is the recognition that I can choose to be present. It's very hard to do, but it's a superpower that we all have access to.
Yeah. How have you learned to, before you get to number three, how have you learned to keep fear at bay? You know, in terms of like, was there something that you learned, or you just realized you needed to do that?
Well, I saw what the learning was, how when you let it in, and maybe at first you don't even realize you're letting it in, but you know, you're consuming media, you start to realize how it takes over your whole day. And it, like everything you do almost comes from this lens of fear. And then also your body starts to do weird things. So it was like, I think I kind of just was more in a passive stance in the beginning and just sort of, I wouldn't say I was addicted to the media, but I was letting it sort of come at me where it did and not really putting guardrails or being in charge of it, just sort of letting it happen. And I saw all these things change, you know, my happiness level, my fatigue, how I was approaching the business, my brain fog, like all this kind of stuff happened. And I learned that it was totally in my control. And that when I started to consume less media, choose to think optimistically, choose to be positive about the future, like everything sort of changed in that regard. So it's like I learned that I have more control over it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that.
The third one's an easy one. It's hard work pays off. You know, we're finishing the year pretty good and it was really tough, but like it ended okay. And like it feels a little bit like our efforts had an impact.
That's awesome, because I think when you're in it and you're working hard and you don't see the results right away, sometimes you can just be like, what am I doing? Why am I working this? You know, and getting to see those results, like you just said, it's great to give yourself the pat on the back, but just to realize like, hey, the reason this came about was hard work.
Yeah. And my team is like so incredibly amazing. And they've really pulled through, like everybody's leader like shined through this year. I've never been more proud. And like, we wouldn't have been able to do what we did without this team being so on point. So in some ways, all that work we did in the beginning to build a strong culture, like it's for years like this. We didn't fall apart. We didn't fall apart at all. And it was tough, but we stuck together. We had to pivot a whole bunch of times, but we made it through.
I love that. You built the foundation. Going forward, what are your plans? And I don't mean to say like, you know, I'm sure there'll be people knocking on your door, probably already have. There's probably other things you've thought out, new products. Where do you see the business, you know, next couple of years?
Yeah. So from a financial perspective, you know, I had mentioned I'm never going back. Like, I want to maintain forever a business that's healthy. So one that grows, like I would love to continue to grow at 20% year over year and have like 10% profits year over year. I know that's not a very sexy answer, but I do really recognize that with business, you can't think about health only for people. So in that, gosh, there's so much we can do. I mean, 20% year over year, we're a $1 billion brand in 4 years. Like, I think it's way more than kombucha. Health aid means better for you beverage. Where else can we go as an enterprise? And even maybe past beverage, could we be just better for you products? Could that anchor find its way to every home in America? I think so. So I'm very much interested in continuing to grow, though healthfully. I always want to stay connected to better for you, because I'm passionate about that. But our team will still, I think, hold this culture. We're very goal-oriented, but we also have a really, really solid sort of family-like culture here. So that's what I see the next 10 years looking like.
I like it. You just mentioned anchor, and I noticed you have the anchor right on the logo. What is that, and why is there an anchor? What does that anchor mean?
When we picked it up, we wanted an icon, first of all, because we all recognized, and especially I would say Justin, but we all recognized that like we want to be a brand people love. So it's not just a name. When we thought about brands we love, Nike, Apple, there are icons involved. Yeah. And gosh, one day we could be such a strong icon that perhaps you wouldn't even need the name. That's the goal. Well, one of the goals. So we wanted it to represent like, what is kombucha to us? At the time we were only doing kombucha, grounding, made of natural elements, strong, everybody sort of can appreciate or understand it. We wanted kombucha to be more appealing to the masses. That was one of the goals with Health Aid when we launched, not to just be for like the healthiest of consumers, but even those that enjoy a cocktail and smoke a cigarette can have a kombucha, you know, welcome into just having something that's a little bit better for you. No exclusivity or judgment here, I guess, is sort of the premise of our brand. And we felt that an anchor was something everyone could understand, rich, poor, man, woman, old, young. But really, the reason we picked the anchor and not a lion head or something like that is that kombu stands for seaweed in Japanese and cha is tea. So it's seaweed tea in real translation. There's no seaweed in kombucha, so it's an odd name. And if you look at the history books and the books written on kombucha, we don't know whether it's myth or not, but there is some tie to the sea, green tea fishermen gathering some cultures from the sea. We don't really know where the first SCOBY came from. Perhaps it came from the sea. There felt like there was some kind of cool story there. So to pay homage to its potential roots, we picked the anchor. But also, the last thing is, and you may have not known this, but kombucha to me is just about being happy and like living your happiest life. It's a part of that. And I love that it kind of looks like a smile.
I love that. I totally love that. Now I will never look at an anchor any. I will always look at it with a smile, which is such a good thing to take, and so much gratitude to you. Before I let you go, with our audience, entrepreneur, any advice you could give, or any advice you can give to those out there right now who might be in the position you were in, let's say at the very beginning, right? And credit card debt, really trying to make their dreams happen. What would you tell those people?
It's our tagline for our company, but it has been a tagline for well more than just kombucha. It's been a business practice. It's follow your gut. I really believe that starting a business is kind of like betting on yourself, because there is no guidebook. You likely don't have the experience. And so you're really charting, like you're in an uncharted place. And so what you're really betting on is your capabilities to solve problems, to figure it out. So the more you kind of take out the self-doubt and sort of start to bet on yourself like you're a freaking Mustang horse, you don't know, but you know, that's where you start to, I think, get to the right place. And your first idea might not be the one, or your first solution might not be the one, but like for sure, if you keep going, that second, the third, what you're going to get closer and closer, because you're betting on the fact that you're smart, and you are, you probably are. So follow your gut to me is the advice. And if you can tap into your best, like your truest self, I believe that's your best self.
Yeah. I love that. This interview is making my day, and I am certainly going to take so much from it. And I just wanted to say thank you so much for coming on. It's really been inspirational, and I wish you the best. And I am sure we are going to keep seeing Health Aid, I mean, just taking off further and further. So thanks so much.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the love and the time.
Always.
And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to How Success Happens wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Wednesday morning, and you don't want to miss it. And if you like to share, please feel free to pass along the show to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost, and I could always use the subscribers. And do you have ideas for guests? I always love to hear about great entrepreneurs. If you know anyone, shoot me an email at hsh@entrepreneur.com or on Twitter at Robert Tuchman, that's RobertTuchman, or even send me a message on LinkedIn. How Success Happens is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for insight on building your business, or even better yet, subscribe to our magazine. No joke, I found my first job after reading about a company in Entrepreneur Magazine back in the 1990s. It's always been my absolute favorite magazine for entrepreneurs. Thanks for listening and spending some time with me today. Until next time, my name is Robert Tuchman, just a fellow entrepreneur and your host. See you soon.